You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Come on.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, we are covering anime from the 17th of April to the 23rd of April.
Yes.
And we'll start from the Tuesday, The Laughing Salesman, Episode 3, Bento Wars, and, my beloved 583 type.
I assumed that was like someone had put the title in wrong, and it just sort of auto-filled it with gibberish.
No, I thought it was going to be a car or something like that. Motorbike, perhaps.
No, this really goes to the heart of the viewing audience for this show. Old men who romanticize trains.
Well, they're sweet. You can get drunk in them and still get to where you're going.
Yeah.
Well, but at any train. Not just this one train the guy is fantasizing about. You can do it on literally any train he wants.
But this one you can do it in privacy.
This one you can do in privacy of a triple bonk.
You and two other people.
Yes. You get drunk, eat a load of Pringles.
Do your back in, you're hunched over in the bunk with your mates.
It seems like a very childish thing. I think it's mostly because he's ducked down, like you say, eating Pringles. Yeah.
Well, he is reliving his youth, isn't he?
it's his young adulthood is what he's reliving.
Look, that'll be me later on because I got to stay up late tonight to do a night shift, so I'll be having some beers and eating crisps and stuff, so it's not too far off the mark. And I'm a young man, allegedly.
And you're only going to do it once. If you go back a second time, you'll be forced to do it inside the luggage compartment.
Oh, dear.
I thought he just like, was cursed to become a crazy old man and homeless guy lives in the train.
I thought this was the closest thing to like a Twilight Zone thing. It's like, if you love this train so much, how about I put you literally inside
here?
The train?
Yeah. This was another episode where it was a game of two halves, except this time the half I liked was the one which had been adapted before, which was the first part, Bento Wars.
Yeah, that was an odd one. I think it's just like everyone in this situation is shitty.
Yes.
Yeah. And also as well, you could tell, this is incredibly old-fashioned because you still have a guy who has his mammy and his girlfriend make lunch for him. If he doesn't do that, he can't eat.
But at the same time, he is portrayed as a total wet blanket.
Yeah.
It's not like portraying that as a good thing that he relies on.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not on his side. I'm like, dude, just make a fucking choice here, okay? Just state your intent.
Yeah, or take, option C, make your own goddamn lunch.
Yes.
Excellent fucking option, yeah.
I think that was the idea, but yes. But even the way he's drawn.
Yeah,
He's wet before he opens his mouth. And then when he opens his mouth, I had to go and look to see if it was one of the Osomatsu actors. It's not, but it's within the same sort of performance. And there's some really great faces of his mum and his girlfriend just getting fed up with him.
Then there are demonic faces as well.
Oh, yeah, well, they're called crazy.
dear.
So in this one, the salesman gives him some special...
It's magic powder or something he calls it, isn't it?
Yes, it's like the essence of ultimate flavor.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's like a super-powered MSG.
Yeah.
If he sprinkles it onto his mum's bento, it will be edible.
I'm not exactly sure what way he was going to play that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, well, I got to convince my girlfriend that my mum's bentos are actually really fucking good. I was like, yeah, but if you do that, then she'll want to eat them because this is the most tasty thing in the world now.
Yeah.
And you only have literally whatever it was, 6 fucking sachets of this stuff.
Yes.
And that's it. There's no more. There's no more on planet Earth.
Don't come asking for more.
There isn't any more.
And he comes asking for more, and then everything goes wrong for him.
Yeah.
The salesman.
Like, I only gave you that as a stopgap measure. You need to come up with a plan in the meantime. Did you come up with a plan? No. Not really.
I'm going to ruin your relationship with everybody.
Everyone you love.
Oh, dear.
Now, in the bar with the barman, who is the other regular character who does...
The bearded guy,
Who does not have a voice actor, because he never speaks. I'm not an art guy, but what's the painting
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
I shared that around. I put that up and I was like, yeah, I don't know what it's bit is, but there's clearly some kind of black mask going on in that portrait anyway.
Yes, it's clearly thematic to the show. Yeah, I think I enjoyed this one better than the first two episodes. But again, it did. The second half one almost. I kind of had to watch it twice because it kind of. I think it may have been quite short compared to the first half anyway.
It felt shorter, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're probably going to get a lot of stories coming up about some guy who works for a company and then he does something, you know, he's. Boss gets in the wrong side of him. It's like, you punk, I'm going to reach over to this and grab you by the scruff of the neck, and then something will happen. You know, that'll either be how he gets into the problem or what he winds up doing because of his problem. So, because I think nearly every client, shall we say, so far has been a salesman or a salaryman or an office lady. And so there's going to be a lot of problems based on people's work and jobs and can't find time to do what they want anymore.
Well, yeah, as I say, it's the audience for the comic. Adults.
Yeah, but I was saying, it can get pretty repetitive in that respect as well.
Possibly, but the thing is, if it didn't look as good as it did, I wouldn't be going back to it each week.
I think that's true.
But
yeah.
It is really well directed.
I think it's not like the Bento Wars was particularly brilliant as a story. It's just like, oh, this fucking guy, dude, just fucking tell your mom or your girlfriend that, you know, you're going to eat their fucking food or make your own shit or get your, you know, it was really good at getting me to hate that guy. So, it did its job there.
Well, next week's is The Woman on the Platform and Runner's Paradise. So possibly Runner's Paradise might be something slightly different. Or it may not be. It may be a salary man who likes to go running.
But he can't because he works too late. And it's like, okay, here's a gym membership for 24-hour gym.
Which here's some magic
go
shoes.
Twice a week.
Okay, on to Shonen Ashibe, Go Go Gomachan, episode 35, Ribbit Ribbit Gomachan, with our second spotting of Nabashin for 2017. He shows up in a magazine in this episode.
Sorry. Oh, okay. I missed him in that.
I didn't check, but I'm guessing it's probably another one he storyboarded.
Right.
As we know, he's working on the show, and in this, Ashibe and Gomachan go to the restaurant.
I always forget the name of the restaurant. Yeah,
so do I. And
like Wang Wang something.
Yeah,
something like that.
Wang Ken, is it?
Yeah.
And then they find a frog there, and he remembers, oh, my granddad said that some people eat frogs.
At fancy restaurants. And this is a fancy restaurant.
He means
it's a Chinese restaurant. Yeah. It's a nice Chinese restaurant.
It is, but it's not it's not the sort of fancy restaurant that
would serve frogs.
Your billionaire grandfather would go to.
Probably not.
Except he does go here occasionally.
Ashiba is trying to hide the frog. Or save the frog, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, and also Mao Chan's uncle's at the restaurant feeling lovelorn.
He's been turned down again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why. Is it because he comes on too strong?
I think so, yeah.
Is it because he's kind of a creeper?
Yeah.
Mm.
Then he falls in love with the daughter.
Yeah.
What's that? Liang?
I think
she's the same name twice.
Liang Liang.
Yeah, I think might have been spelled differently. I think it's spelled correctly now, but I think it might have been spelled phonetically before, previously in the subtitles.
Okay.
Let me see. I shall refer to our cheat sheet to see what I had written down before for her.
Yeah. But anyways, he's just like doing a waitress thing over tending to him, and he's taking it completely the wrong way.
Yeah, and also the other waitress keeps taking his order, and he's getting really kind of annoyed by it.
Yeah, well, he's just playing it over in his head. It's like, you know, hello and welcome. Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome. Hot stuff. Or it just keeps going.
I think it devolves into, will you marry me?
Yeah.
Somehow. Yeah. It's an odd one, all right.
Yeah, they hide the frog in Gomer's mouth.
Yeah, and it's like he has pockets and he has a shirt, but Gomer's mouth seems the most obvious hiding place to him.
What's the last place you think to look?
And they have to come up with an excuse as to why Gomer's ribbiting rather than what do you call it normally doing? Chewing?
That's Q. That's the
Q, that, not chew. Yes, you got it.
Yeah. And it escapes, and it turns out they won't go eat the frog after all.
It just happened to be a frog in the restaurant.
Yeah. It's okay. How does it end again?
I don't know.
The frog jumps out of Gamma's mouth onto his face after he's asked her out, and she screams no, but she turned him down anyway. Oh, and Ashiba's really worried that the frog died or escaped him. It's like, we'll never see that frog again.
Yes, so that was it.
And then what appears to be a man wearing only a trench coat comes up to the restaurant and opens the front of his coat just enough to let the frog out. And it's like, oh, the frog was there. And it turns out her ideal man is this fucking streaker who just happened to be walking by the restaurant. I mean, that's the implication. It's not say it outright or anything.
It doesn't have to be too handsome. We said have the right kind of personality, you know. And this guy's clearly very outgoing.
Yeah.
Probably nice to hang around with.
Well, why was he a streaker? Is that going to come up later?
I don't remember the end of this at all. So this is the first episode, which will be a recurring theme this week, of Brian falling asleep during things he's watching. He's on three different tablets, which cause drowsiness.
Oh, dear.
I don't remember that ending at all. So, yeah, Rian was how it was pronounced. It was spelt before in the subtitles.
Okay.
Yeah. Liang.
I'd recommend watching the end of this, Brian, because I need you to confirm that this guy was a streaker.
Okay, it's my homework.
He definitely is.
His chest hair showing underneath his fucking trench coat, and he appears to be wearing no shoes or pants or anything.
Socks
underneath
or anything.
No, nothing.
There'll probably be a perfectly reasonable explanation for this.
Later, maybe.
Probably
maybe
been swimming or something.
Yeah, he's going to meet...
Swimming in a trench coat.
He's going to meet Mr. Tendo to go for a bracing a few laps in the river.
It would be good if there's another episode which leads into the same ending and we have some explanation of who that is and why he's in that situation.
I mean, the twins have stuck around, surprisingly, so...
Yeah.
I don't think they add characters for no reason.
Okay, next up, Makaruna Aku no Gundan, episode 3, Convenience Store. Another cartoon singing the praises of the Japanese convenience store.
Yeah, but also downplaying Tokyo for once, which is nice.
Yes.
It's like, dude, we don't even need to go to Tokyo. And doesn't he convince them that they've gone to Tokyo when they've actually gone to...
Yes, he convinces, because they want to go, he says, yes, going to, where are they just going to?
He wants to get trendy food like pancakes, which is, to me, not very trendy food, but it's nice food, so I appreciate it. Anyway, and he can only get this in Tokyo, he thinks, because that's the trendiest place. But they go to, they have a fake Disneyland, and I can't remember what
Chioda,
it's called. Chioda,
is that the ward they go to?
It's Disneyland and, what's the other thing there? Akihabara, isn't it?
Yes.
They think it's Tokyo because it's so fancy. Whereas the cynical dog boy is kind of like, it's not Tokyo, but it's working
happy,
for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, the mums of the people who are loitering show up to get their sons out of their UFO and start.
Yeah, and a woman clears them off the planet, so...
Yes, you can't park here.
You can't just park your fucking spaceship here. You need planning permission or whatever.
Yeah, which sets them off looking for a new place.
Yeah.
What do they get from the convenience store?
I don't know. I actually missed this one, unfortunately.
I remember them getting him just being flabbergasted by the amount of sweets and amazing things.
It was
that
very
they had
similar
in
to the first episode of Chi-Chan in that respect.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except he did pay for them. He didn't just start eating them in the shop.
I can't remember exactly how it ended. I kind of have that image of him just freaking out at the convenience stores. Are great.
But yeah, I enjoyed it, even if I can't remember the ending. As I said, this will be a recurring theme.
It's only on the shorts that you fall asleep, not on the longer.
Oh, no, there's something I fell asleep almost immediately when I started watching it.
Oh, excellent, okay.
No, I did rewatch it this evening, but... Okay, next up, talking of Chi-Chan, it's Chi-Chan, episode 2. Surprise! A shot. This started getting strange. They go for a walk in the hills.
Yeah.
they comment that is it Yuka? Yeah, Yuka hasn't found somebody in need of their help.
I think they go specifically into the hills to get the alien spaceship.
Oh, get the alien's UFO, yes, that's
because he's just left it parked in the woods for 2 days now. Sorry, she.
Yes. So it's a lady alien, we learn as well.
It's pink, obviously. Yeah.
And they also demonstrate their powers. The alien has a device. It's like a, looks like a Tamagotchi.
Oh, so you take a photo.
You can take a photo of someone and then you speak their language.
That's it, yes.
Yeah. And Chi-Chan's demonstrates the ability to find things.
To order things.
Order things, that's it.
Yes. Which involved just digging a hole in the garden for 2 hours until he found a rub an eraser.
Yeah. Just until you find something. There's bound to be something buried.
Turns out it is a power because they combine it. They combine the powers later on.
To make it actually useful. Well,
sort of. Yes.
Yeah. More useful, but still weird.
Even weirder, I would say. To the point where I can't quite understand what was going on.
Okay, so they took a picture of a wallet because they were looking for a guy's wallet.
Because they say, yes, always surprised you haven't run into somebody who needs your help because that's what always happens to you. So apparently the alien's already aware of that being her character trait.
Yeah.
They find the guy goes, oh, where's my wallet? I must have left my wallet. And they go, well, we'll look for it for you. They can't find the wallet anywhere. So, you take a picture of a wallet.
What was the second picture they took?
Was it of Chi-Chan and then of a pigeon?
It was one of a bird for no good reason that I could discern, yeah.
And then that's created a mechanical pigeon dog which could sniff out wallets, but instead just attack Chi-Chan.
It chased Chi-Chan until Chi-Chan accidentally came across the wallet, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that, I mean, like, that solved the problem, but not in the way you expect, I guess, yeah.
So I assume that's the story going forward, is that device will do something.
Well, it's in the opening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I assume it won't be just finding a thing every time. Mm. I assume it will be, they'll find
solve the problem with it. Yes. Or, yeah.
I'm going to guess it's going to involve some sort of weird creation every time.
Mm.
This was fine. It was just almost super weird, and to the point where I thought that ordering might have been like a translation thing, which would have, the joke would have worked better if maybe it was a different sort of phrase used.
Yeah, I feel like there's a better way to put that as well. I get you.
Yeah, it just felt the physical stuff in the cartoon was all jolly, and it just seemed like the dialogue didn't quite match up, which may have just been in the translation.
Yeah, it's nearly like it's a little too stiff for what's happening on screen. Yeah.
Do you miss this one as well, Niall?
I did.
Okay. And then we had 100% Teacher Pascal, episode 2, a special 3-part episode.
Yes.
In which we get Terra, 100% physical exam, perfect plate again. And 1% Pascal, which is the best thing in the episode.
I wasn't too gone on the episode until that bit. That was definitely my favorite, yeah.
So the physical exam thing is gags all about your physical exam, which apparently you have to, in this school, the teachers also take the physical exams.
To make it fair, I guess?
Yeah, and there's weird jokes with the principal in his underpants being bungee,
yes.
Teaching children bungee jumping towards him.
Yeah, it's like we're testing to see how close you can get towards him before you've had enough, which, you know, no one wants to get close to him because it's weird.
Then perfect play, was it Sage Pascal?
Yeah, Sage of Skill Pascal.
Yeah.
Who is the guardian of the magical skill stone? But yes, he's delivering a televised public apology because, okay, so I'm unclear as to the whereabouts of the skill fragment. I can account for going to the second pub that night, but after that it gets a little hazy. However, I apologize for that, it won't happen again. But sir, where is the stone? I don't know. As I mentioned before, I went to the second pub. After that, I'm not sure what happened, okay?
Yeah, he also won't admit that he was drunk, and he's also not really that apologetic.
No, not really. It's just like stating it as a fact. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, this seemed really weird for a kids' show, an entire episode about a character being drunk. But, hey, it worked for me. And then 1% Pascal was them saying, well, did you spot 1% Pascal during this episode? And they explain that 1% Pascal is like 100% teacher Pascal, but he is 1/100th the size of him.
Yeah.
And then they reveal where he was. He was on a keyboard.
Like, impossible to see from the angle it was at.
I was almost going to try and go back and see. I can't spot it, but, yeah.
And that was the joke. It's just like, you would never spot it. Also, obviously, the joke is that they've announced
it probably
this
wasn't there in the first place.
At the end of the episode as well, rather than the start, saying, can you spot? Which they do a very similar joke in Haybot this week.
Okay.
Where they have, like, they do a thing, and then they ask you the question after they've done the thing, rather than getting you to pay attention beforehand.
Mm.
That was 100% Teacher Pascal. I think I might have enjoyed this one more than Chi-Chan this week.
Yeah, my main problem with Chi-Chan this week was it was just kind of more cutesy than jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have Bono Bono, episode 41. It's a secret to kids.
This was my favorite short, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, yes.
Yeah.
Where it is just a sketch between Bono and Raccoon's dad.
It's fucking great. It's that wonderful kid logic that it does very well.
Yeah.
Dear. And just his Raccoon's dad just getting more and more frustrated as the conversation goes on.
Yeah. He's not hitting him, though, because Raccoon can do that, but Raccoon's dad don't want to be hitting a child, so he can only get mad at him.
Yeah, that's different. Ah, dear.
Yeah, so the crux is kind of like Bono. The main thing that Raccoon's dad is trying to disavow him of is the Bono's belief that children can get hurt, but they can't die.
Like, he's kind of worrying. He's like, Bono, what the fuck are you doing out here on the fucking mountain? It's like, I don't know. I just thought it'd be cool. It's like, what if you got attacked by an animal? It's like, I don't know. I'd probably run away. It's like, all right, what if you, like, got really tired? It's like, then I'd probably be out of breath. And it's like, well, what if it ate you? Well, then I'd get eaten. And then the adults would do something that kids don't know about. And I'd be fine.
You see him on Russia,
and they all go off into a cave.
It's fine. And then, like, no, what do you mean something secret? That's something secret. And then it's just them with their backs to the camera looking over the shoulder and just going, shh, including that bear, which we've never ever really seen too much of so far.
Yeah,
yeah, it is an adult though, so
yes.
It knows the secret. dear.
They want to, like, you know. Well, how do you know when you've become an adult? Oh, it's when you start.
That,
like,
was fucking amazing. Yeah,
using it, like, kind of longer words, and it cuts to Chipmunk saying, "We live like wandering dogs, Bon and Bon. Are we the symbols of life and death? To what does it all mean? Oh, you've really grown up, Chipmunk. Become an adult now."
And also, you grow in your sleep because it'd be weird if you started growing during the day.
And then it demonstrates how weird that would be. dear. And Chipmunk's dad, sorry, Raccoon's dad just getting more and more, it's like, how can you think this? That's not how it is.
And he's like, yeah, he's basically going, there's not really that much difference between being a kid and being an adult.
Yeah, like, I think the standard thing is a kid, the difference between a kid and an adult is, like, experience and possibly size.
And also, you can still have fun when you're a kid. Apparently, you just can't have fun when you're an adult.
I think that's just because he's a miserable kid.
Yes.
Also, the things that he can have that are fun, he can't mention.
Yes.
Secret.
But yeah, that's the punchline. Yep, that it turns out there is a secret to kids that you can't tell them about. But yeah, this is just, as you say, it's a really good episode.
Mm. Good stuff. I mean, like you say, it's so good that it's just, there's one or two other characters showing up in their thinkings and musings, but it's just a conversation between two guys. And it's so funny for it.
Yeah. It's like a Mamoru Oshii film, but with Hugh Forrest features instead.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, weirdly, as the more I watched Bono Bono, I was like, so particularly when it's just like Bono and Chipmunk and Raccoon wandering around, it weirdly reminds me of Last of the Summer Wine.
Okay.
It's not that different. It's just them fucking around and saying stupid things,
yeah,
I guess.
Just wandering
yeah.
around the countryside, and there are three different sizes and three different personalities. Obviously, Bono Bono would be Clegg. Right. Next up, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 29. It's a regime change. So the main thing I remember this is your man being a dirty old man.
Yep.
Well, claiming not to be a dirty old man, but definitely being a dirty old man. Yeah.
And were the passing of years not more carefully, that would have come off as a lot worse than it did.
Yes.
Mm.
I mean, it's still pretty bad, but Chidori, they have mentioned her age before, and we know what time we're in now, so she would be in her early 20s, I think, at this point.
Mm.
Even though her character design has not changed in the slightest.
Well, neither has anyone else's. So, yeah.
Except from episode zero, when she is drawn specifically as a little girl.
Yeah, okay. Before she was like a full ninja kind of thing. Mm.
So they put their man in as the shogun, don't they?
Chicago Yoshiaki.
And nobody wants to have a conversation with him.
No.
Because he's just constantly bigging up how great he is. Dear.
And, Nobunaga refuses any position that he wants to give him.
Doesn't want to get tied down, wants to be free to move events as he sees fit.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it is great how the personalities of this match exactly with Drifters.
Yeah.
Yes, actually.
I mean, Drifters knew what it was doing, and obviously this knows what it's doing.
Yeah, yeah. But it is fun to see different portrayals of the same character be very similar.
Mm.
And the punchline is that... what's his name? Gets left behind to look after the shogun.
Oh, man, Mitsuhide gets left behind.
Yeah, the straight man guy,
And also, Matsunaga says, Hideyoshi, you seem like a man who's, on the way up in the world. I predict you could... become bigger, as big as somebody. No, bigger than Nobunaga one day. And it's like, oh man, I better start eating some food then, so I can grow taller and fat, stronger.
Not what I meant.
And is it the Miyoshi 3? Not the Mino 3.
The other three.
A guy comes up.
The Mino 3. That's it.
No, the Mino 3 are the good guys. It's the other three.
Too many threes.
Yes. That's
the joke.
That's the joke. That's what the Mino 3 are complaining about. But yeah, it's the other three. I can't remember if they're the Hoshi or Miyoshi 3. Anyway, a guy shows up saying, I hear you guys hate Nobunaga. Well, I've got a plan.
And he does appear to have a character design, so he's somewhat important from history.
Yes. Or maybe not. We don't know. Or he could be somebody who hates Nobunaga until he inevitably loves him. But then maybe fame in the end. But for now, we'll love him.
Is anything else of importance to have in this episode? I think that's pretty much where it was. Otherwise, yes, it was just Hisahide being a dirty old man, trying to put the moves on Chidori.
Is he trying to put the moves on her, or is he trying to freak her out?
I think he's trying to put the moves on her.
No, he wants to quickly request, hey, Nobunaga, but you said it in my way, huh? Give him some lessons at night time, if you know what I mean. About astronomy on the stars.
Yes, oh. The other thing was Nobunaga left your man behind because he was kind of really excited by the idea of seeing Nobunaga's wife again.
Oh, that was it, yes.
That was it, yeah. He was having none of that.
Fulfilled my duties in my absence, yes.
That was the other joke, her meeting up with her husband again.
Oh, yeah.
I need to talk to you in private. Everyone's right outside, they can hear everything, you guys.
You mean in the bedroom? I mean war room!
Ah, dear.
Okay, on to the four-length things. My Hero Academia, episode 17. Strategy, strategy, strategy. This seemed to have flown by as quickly as a short did for me.
Yeah, it's weird. It seems, especially from the pace of the last one, it's only a part of the thing, and I imagine it'll finish at the next episode. But there's a lot happening in it.
Yeah.
It didn't really slow down for what little actually happens in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the first half is also all the planning in it, but planning, it's revealing more about kind of deeper things in the character's personalities, because Deku thinks, okay, well, I'll get my mates on. So, because Ojiko has volunteered, good on her, she's going to stick by me and make a team together. And thought, Ida, he'll do it too. And said, no, man, you're my bud, my friend, but this is the fucking sports day. I don't want to be outshone by you, so I gotta do something else to make me stand out. So I'm sorry, but I had to decline.
He says he can't progress if he sticks with your man's coattails.
Exactly.
He needs to progress beyond him as well. Mm. And it's kind of it's not like a betrayal of a friend, but it is kind of you can see Midori is kind of crestfallen with it. And also terrified that he's going to get the shit kicked out of him. and you get to see the other guys kind of form teams. Everyone wants to form up with Bakugo, but he doesn't know anyone else's name in the class.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Minoru's like, oh, none of the girls want to be in a team with me. So he goes to, is it Mezo, the guy with the forearms and the weird...
Yeah, his mouth's at the end of the hands.
Yes.
Mm. Then, and he's got a great plan.
He convinces him because he does actually have... and it is a really good plan.
It's pretty good.
He formed the creepiest team as a result.
Oh, dear.
And I was just trying to find the name of the other guy we kind of get to see this episode from Class 1B.
Oh, doesn't he team up with some of the guys from Class A?
Nito Monoma.
You mean the guy with the short blonde hair?
Yes.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who's, while everyone's chasing after...
Let's get it all figured out.
Midoriya, he's busy nicking, getting the points off everybody else.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't... Like he's saying it the whole time. It's like, we just needed to come in the top 42. We didn't need to come fucking first.
Yes.
No reason to rush this. It's like, I'm not trying to get first here. I'm just trying to win. Mm. And it's like, yeah, you're making a lot of sense, buddy.
Woo, third best. Yes. Woo!
It's also kind of like, he also likes to try to point out that, yeah, you didn't get to see our quirks either, because we were being careful
hanging
too.
Back, yeah. Well, the other thing is, like, I think his strategy kind of makes sense, because if you take out Bakugo by you coming second place to another guy, then you're in with a better chance of, like, if you take out the top guys by not aiming for the very top. At least not at this stage of the competition, yeah.
But he just pissed Bakugo off.
Yeah, which is a bad idea. Don't mock him, because he changes the plan. We're going to murder everyone. Oh, dear.
Midoriya's team, it ends up with him,
Ochako, Gadget Girl.
Yeah, Mei and Fumikage, the crow.
Yeah, who's the linchpin.
Yeah, we also see that his power is sentient, separate to him.
Yeah. Yeah, it can just talk, and it's like, you got a boss, kind of thing.
It's like, actually, because seeing it now more, there's a bit more, because it's also a shadow. It's like, what's his face? Eddie from Guilty Gear.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, actually kind of similar kind of design as well, the shape of the head and all.
Well, I mean, like, it has the shape of his head.
Yeah.
It's another bird. It's a pretty solid plan Midoriya's got, and they're kind of mixing it up by using your one's gadgets as part of the their thing.
Yes,
yeah, and Ochako, I'm gonna make him weightless so you can get a lot more lift out of the hover boots.
Yeah, she's getting really sour that your one's giving him so much attention, and also that it's like, well, it wouldn't be as good if it wasn't for my hovering. You know, if I didn't put low gravity on, that jetpack wouldn't have lifted us all up.
Yeah, so Bakugo's team is Hunter Sero, that's the guy with the tape elbows, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ijiro, who's the rock hard skin red hair guy, and Mina, who's the acid girl.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to remember their names now, or at least remember their powers based on the names.
I think I'll start to remember the names once they get their superhero names, because they're pretty good.
Yeah, because I know some of the superhero names from reading the comic. So, yeah, in my head now, particularly because he's been the focus of the last few chapters, Ijiro is just Red Riot all the time now.
That's what I'm calling him as well. I liked it when Bakugo was like, hey, Bakugo, we should team up. Come on, we're both pretty tough guys. He's like, spiky hair guy. It's like, dude, we both have the same haircut. What are you talking about?
Todoroki's team is
Ida.
Denki, he's the electrical guy, isn't it? Momo is the other one who didn't have to take the test.
The
one who pulls
matter creation. Yes. Girl.
Yeah, he's gonna he's got a pretty good solid team, because he's gonna use her to make like insulation so that your man's electrical attacks don't affect the rest of them and that kind of thing. And, it's a pretty good strategy.
And yeah, the other one with the little lech in the forearm is Suyu, the frog girl, is also on his shoulders. hiding it's his arms.
The form of the grossest team, who have like this sort of massive flesh on his back, and there's like a little creep inside throwing sticky balls to it, and then this long, like 30-foot long tongue is just shooting out of it as well.
Just whipping out, yeah.
It's like, what is inside there? It's scaring me.
I thought it was really funny the way the Invisible Girl decided to be like the top of the fucking thing, which is like, that makes your fucking headband a really obvious target. I guess you can't see where her arms are at any given situation. But it's it seems like a weird strategy.
Yeah, whereas Midoriya's strategy is don't run away.
Well, all he has to do is hang on to that headband.
I'm ready in first place. So.
Exactly, yeah.
I spotted that guy who has the speech bubble for a head in the yes. crowd as well.
Yeah, he showed up in two scenes, I think, in this one. So that's
what's his deal?
Is this kind of thing common in like Japanese sports thing, or is it just a kids game?
It's in kids. I think it's in kids sports days, definitely, because it's definitely in other anime I've seen. Where
I've definitely seen it in other anime. So
they played a version of this in the sports day episode in Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just wondering how common it is. It seems pretty fun. If it was never a thing when I was a kid, so.
Well, you might see it, you know, if I'd like made someone mess around in the pool or the lake, like, you know, they get up on your shoulders and try and push each other over. It's similar.
Yeah, effect. Yeah.
As I say, it's run by really fast for me. I thought it was fastest moving episode, I think.
Yeah, basically it's just the setup of them trying to form teams and then the start of the contest and who's trying to go for who. That's the episode, and yet it manages to get a lot in and go pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, it's more just like it's just the point that it leaves off on. They go, oh, yeah, you're just going to keep me on hope next week. It's just a really consistent, just really kind of really solid show. So I think that the pacing has gotten a bit better than it was previously too.
And I've seen people say this and Rage of Bahamut are kind of ahead of schedule on production. Which is
okay.
Why they both
okay.
Look
good.
So good.
They planned it out, all right. That's good.
Mm.
And also partly why Yuri on Ice didn't look so good in places.
All right.
Because they were busy working
the
on
schedule.
Rage of Bahamut. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Rage of Bahamut Yuri on Ice tie-ins for the game?
No.
No.
Ah, where you could get characters from Yuri on Ice in the Rage of Bahamut game.
How good would they be? Got dragons and shit flying around. What's good? Ice skating.
I think they're from like the Frost Kingdom or something, of course.
Okay.
So it's your three leads, basically dressed up as knights and wizards.
I figured they'd be just wearing their ice skating outfits.
No. They're rethemed for the situation they're in.
All right.
Right, next up, Tiger Mask Double, episode 28, The Yellow Demon, which refers to two characters this episode, both the Yellow Devil and Tiger Mask himself.
Yeah, and it's a callback to original Tiger Mask as well, right?
Yeah, back when he was a bad guy.
Yeah. Because this episode's all about dealing with being a heel when you're used to being the hero.
Yeah. So like, people are always questioning, we'll only know if Tiger Mask is really a heel if he starts using heelish tactics, which he kind of does in a really unfortunate scene of beating up a man who is currently in hospital after almost breaking his neck in the ring.
Oh, shit. Well, now I know we'll put him there.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Not as credit, he's just spending most of the kind of like grappling with the morality of this. He had like the gumption to move forward. He doesn't feel great about it. He tried to justify his actions to just with attention to the old man and it's like, man, I gotta do what I gotta do. It's like, well, look at Takuma. What happened to him? You guys, fucking legs broken. He's like in hospital. He might never walk again. Well, I'll be different this time. I'm ready for or something like that. You know, just very kind of vague reasoning. That one, what happened to him? What happened to me? Well, even though he's doing the exact same thing that he did as well.
Yeah. And you can see how it's kind of affecting people around him. So it's affecting his coach that he's just being a crankier old man and really annoyed that he's like, dude, I taught you all those heel moves, so you know what to do against them.
Not to do him, yeah. And he seems pretty cheesed off when he sees him in a train gym. Everyone's saying, have you got a fucking your own gym in GWM? Get the fuck out of here.
he won't let the manager, he wanted her around as well either, because I'm guessing she's too much of a positive influence. You know, he can't be a proper heel with her about. And it's obviously affecting the nurse as well, because she's like, oh no, my hero. He's turning into such a dick.
Yeah, this felt like the most soap operatic
episode.
It's like somebody did something terrible last episode. Now here's everybody's reaction to it. But yeah, then also the thing of her being invited back to be the physio for Tiger the Dark.
And you know what's going to happen? That she's going to rehabilitate.
It's
going to
be a love triangle.
She's going to rehabilitate him. And he's going to be the only guy who can stop his descent into madness.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing, because like, while Tiger Mask is having like a training montage of being a heel, he's having a training montage of trying to go through physio, basically. Yes.
Yeah. We also get a flashback of how he got involved in Tiger's Den in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, and he's the one guy who reaches out to Takuma, and I guess Takuma kind of listens to him up to a point. He doesn't try and bash him over the head. He's like, dude, you're trying to do exactly the thing I did, and I'm in hospital.
Yeah, and he still can't even look him in the face, because like, Takuma's neck is in a brace, so you can't turn around. Like, come out to the front, you know, just so I can see it, because I can't turn my head like this. And he just said, no, let's talk to you from back here and hand you the pudding from behind you. It's like, this isn't sitting well with him, obviously.
Yeah.
It did make me wonder whether, if we ever get the third's origin, whether he's had a similar path.
Yeah.
He maybe was also trying to infiltrate Tiger's Den to take care of somebody, but ended up being so totally corrupted by it that he's now in charge of it.
Yeah, that would make sense as well. It's like, because he wasn't trying to be Tiger the Great the Third. He was trying to be Yellow Devil.
Yeah.
So maybe he was trying to strike it out in his own thing, but it ended up getting just as bad as it.
Because we see him basically invite Takuma to join, so you take him down.
And that's the way Takuma says it as well. Well, I was basically headhunted by Yellow Devil.
And all during this, we're seeing New Japan go up against these miracles again and again and again.
We're going to keep multiplying. Blah, 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 blah.
There's a weird bit where like the Tanahashi and Nagata and Okada are all like, oh, put our differences aside. We'll all band together to fight the miracles. And then the very next match, Okada's not in it. They just sent Ishii along instead.
Yeah. Well,
I'm busy tomorrow.
Well, it seems to be, we're not going to send like, you know, all the best guys first thing. We're going to sort of just go what we have and until we whittle it down. And for the ones coming up, and now it's going to become a 5-on-5 match. We're going to bring in all the aces, and like, you know, Los Ingo Bernals will be back from Mexico, so we can put them inside in the roster as well. And we'll have all the best guys we have possible. It's kind of more just kind of stalling until they can get like the proper team they want put together to finally take these guys out.
Yes, because at the end, a fourth miracle shows up, rather.
He calls him out and is like, you keep saying you're going to multiply, but you haven't multiplied in ages. Oh, yeah, number four. It's like, oh, God damn it, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that miracle number three is Fukuwara Mask.
You
could be that boss man character as well.
Could be.
It's hard to know for sure, but that seemed to be the implication, with Fukuwara Mask going, I have to go now, I have another thing to do, wink wink wink. But it could be a red herring, I suppose.
It could be. Or they've got some super secret plan they can't let anybody in on.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in Kevin's whole story as well, because he's there like just baiting Tiger Mask the whole time. It's like, oh, how's it feel to be beating up your friends? Is this his revenge for now? It's not great right now.
No.
I guess he's sticking with the company line, yeah.
Did enjoy this episode, though. I like this turn they've done, as to say. It's kind of the opposite of the original Tiger Mask, of the heel becoming the babyface.
Yeah.
We've had the guy who was the babyface right from the start is now forced to become a heel.
Yeah, we're kind of getting the heel turn babyface with Takuma's story. That seems to be the way that's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's obviously, well, he's going to get well. He's going to join New Japan Pro Wrestling and be sort of as a rival then
as Tiger the Light.
They've switched, yeah, or something like that. I fully expect him to go with some corny ass thing, because it can't be Tiger the Dragon. That's owned by GWM. It can't be that character. So I'll be Tiger the Light instead.
Miracle number six. Yeah, because I always thought like the next miracle was going to be Takeru's miracle recovery, but then we had a cut to him still doing physio. I was like, oh, okay, right.
Yeah, he's going to be a while out for...
Yes.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Attack on Titan, episode 29, Soldier.
Soldier.
I'll leave it to you two.
Let's see, we're kind of just leaving off where we had the...
It does an odd thing at the start where it leaves us where we kind of were, and then it goes like, then 2 hours earlier, and it's like
yeah. Well, at the end of the previous episode, it cut ahead to like, you know, the rest of them gearing up to prepare to head out to enact their own plan.
Yes.
And then they, you know, if there's somebody like in your ranks, you know, who may have some able to talk about the thing in the wall. So, and it's this person. And to go out and
they have to go rescue her, and she's specifically trapped in this castle with the other guys. Yeah,
yeah. But it's all about them. It's sort of kind of hold up on there, and they think they're safe because Titans can't go around at night. But of course, we know the opposite now.
they soon know that, yeah, as well.
Yeah,
and they're kind of freaked out about that Beast Titan because he's freaking huge.
Yeah, he's climbing up the wall. I don't know, he seems to sort of climb up and just hop over the other side of the wall as well.
And he uses his signature move of throwing horses really far.
Yeah. But before they kind of had enough that initial attack, they're looking around the castle. And Ymir's acting like a bit of a weirdo. Like Connie's just like talking about, you know, phone. I saw some weird stuff in the village, man. Everyone was gone, but there was no sense of violence. It's like, Connie, you fucking idiot. What are you talking about? Phone said, Ymir, just take it easy. What are you fucking? Oh, no, he's been an idiot, man.
Yeah, and I think it's like the way Connie's thinking was going is the way I think anyone who was thinking about it is like, did everyone in this village turn into a titan? Because that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. But obviously, she's trying to distract from that. With calling Connie a motherfucker and acting like an asshole. Yeah. But the way... What's your man's name? The blonde
Rainier,
guy? Rainier. The way he kind of goes along is like, yeah, good job getting Connie to get out of his despair by acting like an asshole.
keep doing that.
Yeah.
And they find some like some canned food in there, and she's taking it out of the box and it's like, oh, well, I don't like canned herring, but sure, here we go. Here, catch that. Okay, thanks for that. Wait, how do you know this is full of herring? Because I can't read a word of this. I don't know what language this is. And then that's turning up alarm bells, and he's about to kind of maybe press it a little further. It's like, guys, get out here, Titans are in the castle or outside.
They keep stopping revealing mysteries because more Titan attacks.
So like the senior scouts there to go out there, and they go take care of business outside there. But like some little ones have got in, so the younger recruits decided to like band together to take care of that.
Yeah, they got to barricade the doors.
Which they do just about. Like Rainier gets, you know, bitten on the arm at one of them, and you know they're about like, you know, like 9 or 10 footers, you know, so they can fit inside. Inside areas of castle.
But Rainier's fucking thing was so badass, where he's just like he lifts the Titan on his back and is walking up the stairs like, I'm gonna jump out the window of the castle, killing us both.
Wait, Rainier. Maybe just like give him a knife here and just cut its fucking jaw open, so it releases grip, and then you can throw it out.
Yeah, it's decided to clamp down on him, and that's all it's doing. Because like, oh, like, they're still done.
I want to be dramatic and jump out the window and be the big hero. Well, you don't have to be, so it's okay.
I really need to write the character's name down. The blonde one who might have some secret past thing. She's tearing her skirt to make a bandage and what do you call the thing for broken arm?
A splint.
Yeah, that for Rainier. And he's just like, okay, now I have to marry her because she has some great legs. I was just like, okay, that's a weird reaction to this situation, but okay.
Yeah. It seems to be going okay, but then like more, like a larger Titan attack comes, and then like they quickly fall like under the brunt of this assault, and things seem pretty hopeless.
The guys who actually had their gear on, they're running low on stuff, and they get really messed up.
Yeah. I felt so bad for that guy at the pompadour, like, you know, the one thing I'll do for me die, you know, because they found some alcohol in the hidden in like a chest in the castle, and but he used that for like cleaning out the wounds from the first attack earlier on, and he gets knocked through a wall, bloody and battered, and he finds, okay, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna have one last swig of grog, and then he opens the bottle and it's like empty. It's like, oh no, and then he gets reaches in and gets eaten.
Yeah, as he's getting pulled out to get eaten, like his neck snaps on the fucking wall, and I was just like, dude, give him that much.
Yeah.
But no, it didn't. Because it's a very cruel thing.
The lady was like a squad leader who was like really fun doing it well. She gets an awful doing because we see her getting torn to pieces, like screaming for her father. Like, oh, that's horrifying.
It's not a good way to go out, but generally they aren't in this. So they figure they're trapped at the top of the tower. Titans probably crawling up, and there's like reinforcement Titans just coming all over the place.
Mm.
And so the girl with the freckles,
Ymir.
Ymir, she says, all right, Connie, give me your knife. I'm going to see if I can take care of this.
But I'm going to attack him with this. And it's like, Krista, remember that promise you made in that snowy mountain back in her training days? I'm going to hold you to it right now. And then
that's going to be revealed next episode. But
yeah, and the thing she's going to like, she's going to just jump and try to, you know, go to glorious heroic death. But she cuts her hand halfway down, and wouldn't you know it, she can turn into a titan as well. And
yeah, a little mini one with a big head.
Yeah, but that was already, I think, going to be an apparent thing, because like, oh, you can read this foreign language like canned foods. Obviously, you're from outside; you're not from around here.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that maybe suspect her already from the. I doubt there's, you know. That they found all of the, I guess,
Titan people?
Hidden agents within their ranks.
Mm, yeah.
But I suppose not all of them are on could be like, you know, the faction wants to destroy humanity, but not all of them could be necessarily working towards that end. There could be other ones who have, you know, infiltrated behind the wall, but they are there to maybe try and counteract this, you know.
Like, the only thing she seemed to be doing nefarious was trying to get Connie off the line of thinking that of what happened in his village, which presumably is something that is part of her job. It's like, okay, spread misinformation or something like that, you know.
Yeah,
let the truth come out at least.
Well, maybe not. It can't come out yet. It could be like, you know, part of her mission that she needs to kind of keep this under wraps.
Well, she really didn't want to do this. This is like a last ditch effort kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, before I thought, okay, well, we'll get out of this one, we'll be able to get out, we'll get away, and you know, everything will become a secret. But now my cover's blown. So like, if I get killed, then that's in my mission anyway. So I may as well just blow my cover and just.
Yeah, my thinking is like that. She probably won't come out of this alive, because then far too many secrets could be revealed.
I don't know.
So is it lost at this point? With more people being eaten.
No, I wouldn't say it's lost, because like I feel like there will be like answers to these mysteries at some point. Where I don't feel like a lot of these are just going to like trail off into nothing. There does seem to be definitely I put in the pieces together, because you know, they went through. Mm. There's a Titans are broken in. We got to take them out. But we've went through and we didn't find anybody in the village, and you know, and we went through the wall. There was no holes. So you're obviously putting together. Okay, well, obviously they're.
The invasion's coming from within, kind of thing.
And, and we've seen at the Beast Titan, he can climb over the wall, so he has climbed over it, and probably whatever he can do or knows how to do to just turn people to Titans, he's doing that. And there are people inside the wall as well who know about that. And people who have infiltrated like behind the wall who can turn into Titans now is not an unknown factor as well. We know they're out there, we know that most of them are plotting to bring down all humanity, because even that big, like, colossal one that broke the wall in the first place in the last series, that one literally appears and just vanishes. So obviously that's someone that's just turning on and turning off and just getting the hell out of there.
So. Yeah, yeah. It's more so trying to figure out what the... It's kind of like the zombie thing again, where the rules have changed and you're just trying to figure out what the context is now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's still... This, after, like, you know, just a little while ago, we had a little moment of kind of victory. This seems like, you know, oh, we've got to counterbalance that with some like people in depths of despair getting devoured by this incoming threat.
I'm kind of worried about the next episode having like in a flashback, as long as it's not too extended and such. It's keeping up still a reasonable pace. And even though this was all like taking place in the one castle, it still felt like progression, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it was good. It was nice and kind of tense enough.
Mm.
I think as well, like, no, I'll, in the same bracket as My Hero Academia, this does seem to have improved its production, its pacing, its consistency. Much improved over what people's practice maybe of it from the previous show.
Yeah.
Right, Hey Bot, episode 30.
Ah.
This one was called... What was it called? It was called I Can't Forget. And in this episode, everybody wants to screw the awesome fine screw into various things. Okay, right, so... First of all, we learned that the two future versions of Nejiru are now living in the present, and they've got their own little houses, which are both just filled with black bin liners full of garbage because they're princes and they've never had to take their own rubbish out. They just left it there, we're expecting somebody to take it.
Oh, dear.
Gross.
And then the rest of the episode is basically everybody trying to charm the awesome fine screw into letting it screw itself into them. And it likes everybody apart from Haybot's brother, Peckett. It also tells everybody that they're awesome, they're fine, except Peckett. It always comes to Peckett and basically it just ignores him. But in the end, it screws into both Haybot and Peckett. And everybody's happy. The end. Otherwise, it's just a long... It's an excuse for loads and loads of sex gags in a children's cartoon.
As many this as is you barely can sit a kid's in.
Cartoon. Hey. I think it's his wearing of a year of a kid's cartoon, but the actual audience is grown adults.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, hey, alright.
It airs at 7 o'clock in the Sunday morning. It's definitely a kid's cartoon.
But yes, or you've been up all night sincerely drinking with your buddies. You don't want to sleep. It's like, ah, hey, bud. Welcome to my shit, bud.
Yeah, one of the Japanese toy... there's a Japanese toy YouTube channel that I follow, and occasionally it has done live commentary of Haybot. But yeah, the lines in this episode include, the minute it went in, I felt these zing, zing, zing mysterious electric shocks shooting through my body. That overwhelming feeling when it's inside me. I'll make you happy, so please put it in. Just put it in already.
I don't know, that's by the voice that goes through a kid's head when like they doesn't put their finger in the outlet in the wall. Yes. Like, yes, yes, I will.
I'll put it in only when I feel like it. I can't get enough of that good spanking feel. That's when they're spanking the screw again.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's kind of unmistakable.
Oh, dear. You know, Brian, a lot of people are going to be able to use those voice clips against you.
Well, there you go. this was a really good episode of Haybot, if you're immature as I am. And like people sneaking past filthy jokes into children's cartoons.
Mm.
And then there was a bit at the end which sort of said that things are going to get serious next episode. We shall see if it keeps that promise.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it will at this stage, right?
There's an underlying plot. There is a serious science fiction underlying plot. It just very rarely comes to the surface. Yeah. Okay, on to Dragon Ball Super Episode 87, Hunt the Poachers, Goku and Number 17's United Front. This is the thing on Sunday morning, I got up, I put it on, I fell straight asleep. I woke up the moment it's ended, I put One Piece on, I fell straight back to sleep again. I woke up the moment that ended.
Time for some exciting Shonen Jump action.
And then I was able to stay awake for all of Haybot. But I did rewatch it just before we started recording.
Okay.
So, the episode is exactly what it says in the title, as most of these are.
Yeah. This probably could have been wrapped up in one episode last
this
week.
This could have been easily wrapped up in one episode.
You got to push it on a little further.
I was going to look up if I'd seen this properly on the Sunday when I watched it the first time. I can't remember, never remember the guy's name who is sort of co-plotting this and does the manga.
Oh,
because he started out in doing doujin, and now he's doing the official thing. I just wondered whether he'd done something about Android 17 before, because these two chapters felt like somebody really loves Android 17 and wanted to see Android 17 get his due.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially with the last episode, because that fight was actually very well animated.
Yeah.
Mm.
But this one also felt like somebody who really liked the series and was like, okay, in the logic of Dragon Ball, this is how this situation should be dealt with rather than just simply a fight, because it draws on continuity of this guy's got a bomb, so the Goku therefore goes, oh, well, there's a guy who had a bomb before, what did I do with him? I took him to this place.
Well, that's probably the best joke, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Fucking Goku. Like, King Kai should just say, you're not allowed to come here anymore, Goku. I can't prevent you because you can teleport, but stop it.
No, you already did anyway. What even matters to you?
His house is there. His car is there. His monkey is there. All his stuff is there. Stop blowing it up. Oh, dear. I do like the way I'd forgotten. I was like, why isn't he getting up? But I was like, oh, right, yeah, super high gravity.
Yeah.
I kind of forget that sometimes. But it turns out he didn't have a bomb in him. He had a special birthday surprise for one of the crew. Another good joke.
Yes. Because the other characters react exactly as you would. You're like, what?
Why? Why did you put streamers up your nose?
He's a great boss. He's the employee as well.
Yeah, I mean, like that made me like the boss character, because it was just like, you're just generic villain. And I was like, wait, you were planning one of your employees' birthdays? That's actually pretty cool.
How nice of you. Too bad you're a filthy space poacher, but oh well.
There's a lot of Android 17 telling Goku, stand back, I've got this throughout this episode.
Well, the best bit is where those two guys show up. It's like, hey, I'm just going to fight the boss. And Goku's like, no way, he's the strongest guy. We'll paper, scissors, rock for it. He's like, nope, bye. He just hops over the guys.
Android 17 deftly leapt over the approaching guards and ran straight to the boss's room. It's like, do you stop your doing right now, evil boss? Android 17 is like, oh, okay, I better stop, Android 17, because you are the handsomest and best character.
Yeah.
But you just say, well, yeah, I will come and help you after you have saved the planet numerous times. The guy is like, well, most of the times I didn't really notice that I was saving the planet. I just wanted to fight really strong people.
He does say the thing of, I just can't stand it when innocent people and animals are hurt or threatened and stuff. Which, but it is kind of thing of like, yeah, I wasn't ever trying to save anyone.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that is the line which says what, because they're discussing what they're going to do with the Dragon Ball, the Super Dragon Balls.
Because he's trying to, since he couldn't tempt him with not a prize money, because that's not what's happening.
Yes.
It's like, but they're Super Dragon Balls. They're way bigger. Like, he hasn't explained they can grant better wishes.
Yeah, than what because the wish that Android 17 wants, Bulma could fulfill for it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bulma could fulfill with the magic of infinite money.
You rich Auntie Bulma.
I think she has a fucking boat that big. What am I talking about?
Yeah,
she saw it in the movie. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
It wasn't in the movie.
Yeah.
It was in the CV series. I wish we.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
I wish it wasn't, because then it would have been good, those first 14 episodes. they had the boat, so they didn't have to draw any backgrounds.
Well, they already have a boat, so that's that problem solved anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure will probably, knowing this series, it will be that boat that he gets at the end. Because I'm pretty sure this line is to foreshadow what Goku is going to do with the Dragon Balls at the end of the tournament. Even though any sensible person will have figured it out already. But at least this puts it into text that he's actually given it some thought.
He's going to wish for people to fight.
No, he's not. He's going to wish for everybody to be, because he doesn't want people to get erased.
I thought he was going to restore them so he could fight them.
Oh, yes, that as well. Yes.
He wasn't restoring it for altruistic reasons, just for I want to fight them reasons.
Which is why
no one has to die. That's a good side effect, but you know, mostly
he's accidentally saving the world again. Yeah,
which is why I kind of have in the back of my mind, because Toriyama being a US comics fan, that maybe they'll do a Crisis on Infinite Earths thing where you wish that everybody's in the same universe.
That's possible. We might have two Earths in the same place. Oh, dear.
so he doesn't have to travel through all the universes to get into fights with his people.
Mm.
And then just to drive in how nice the Pride Troopers are in that universe, Jacko shows up.
Oh, God damn.
That is the worst.
I've forgotten how much of an asshole Jacko is. It's difficult to kind of keep it in your head.
This might be the worst he's been.
Just the brilliantness of, it's like, listen, I'll probably, like, I'm going to take all credit for this. It's like, but we did it. It's like, yeah, but it's my jurisdiction. I'll probably send you a thank you note. Probably won't, though.
Be pay for Jacko. Be promotion in the way for old Jacko.
So this is how he's gotten as far as he has in his job as a super elite space cop. Just taking the credit.
I do like the spaceship all wrapped up in police warning tape.
Well, it was on a tow line as well.
Yes. And they're going to let Goten and Trunks look after the island after all.
Well, Trunks is very dependable and certainly not a child, as far as you know.
Well, he's seen his future self, embarrassment, vice upon him. You know, he's what's in store for him. He's got to live up to that ideal.
Yeah, but I'm not sure 17 would have left a child.
Still a 10-year-old boy, though. So.
Just have to fully explain to them not to beat the animals up.
Don't eat any of them.
Yes, that as well.
They're actually a lot better at not eating animals. Because they did fight a giant snake and not murder it.
Yeah. Well, Goten is very polite, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. This should be okay.
Yes, yeah, he's kind of got his mother's... in fact, not sure his mother's politeness. I don't know where he got the politeness from.
His big brother, probably.
Yeah, possibly, yes.
Yeah, he's got enough piccolo.
His mother's politeness more seems like an act of being polite.
To hide the frustration. Yeah,
it's like hiding that she's really like a barbarian king's daughter.
Dear.
And a lot of time has passed now. We're now at the 20-hour mark. So
yes, and Beerus has a bad dream where he thinks Goku got killed. A nice fake out.
I like Vegeta kind of holding himself back. He's like, those stupid fucking gods of destruction. I wish they stopped waking up my baby. he's pretty great. He's having like a very bad time of it.
Yeah, you know? And it'll get worse probably when Goku explains what he's done. Because I assume that's the only thing which is going to convince him to join the team.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, like, towards the end of this episode was a lot more fun, but yeah, it did seem kind of drawn out.
Yes. But to tell you what was the best thing this week was Rage of Bahamut again. Episode 3, Close Encounter. In which we get some arm wrestling.
A lot of arm wrestling.
We get a deadly trap set. We get the gods plotting the fate of that kid. Mm. And we learn about Nina's teacher. Mm-hmm. And the mysterious stranger who looks exactly like a character we've seen before, except wearing glasses.
Yes.
Who could it be? Is it the same character wearing glasses?
He's like a character who runs the town. He looks a lot like a certain somebody. And... He pays for to participate in the amateur class, but this ring he's got, which has the royal seal on it, but it can't be royalty, it's gotta be a fake.
Says the dog, yeah.
Yes.
Except the cartoon very carefully doesn't show you that hand of the king later on. So it doesn't confirm that it is the king in disguise.
Well, it could be easier to be, oh, it's the king's twin brother, or it doesn't.
Yeah, or the king isn't the king.
Well, the other thing was it didn't skip a generation of king.
I accept several generations of king. But
I thought it skipped one whole king. Like,
oh no, I think it's like a couple. Numerous, yeah.
Okay, I was thinking it could have been one of the other guys, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, there's this, they're having this, basically the duck is getting loads of money by having Nina wrestle.
He got to get booze money somehow. Like.
They have, yes.
it's only like a hundred, whatever rupees.
Is it rupees?
It's rupees. Yes.
Oh, brilliant! Yes.
I mean, it's not that at all. But I think it's still, if you do it like 100 times, you're gonna get 100 quid out of it. So
and you get all the beefy dudes. Kind of going.
Yeah, and I was like,
yeah, we can probably do this.
And as you're doing it, my brain's going, oh, it's a good job that she doesn't find any of these people attractive. And then of course, somebody shows up who we've just seen at the start of the episode visiting a grave site.
Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, it looks like it's a guy who looks like the king, but in disguise. He's sort of wearing a turban, would you say, and glasses. Yeah. At the start, he's wearing the rings which the king's, well, at least the king's character design on the website's got, is wearing. Mm. And the thing, we only see his hand, we only see the hand he arm wrestles with.
Yeah.
With the rings on. And then, but then later on when we see the king, we only see the other hand with the other set of rings on. So we don't see whether or not his right hand that he arm wrestled with and got the ring that he gave as the payment to the duck is missing or not.
I should have paid attention which sword he used to see if, like, the king is actually left-handed or something. that might have been a hint.
We also learned the king is surprisingly strong. If this is, or at least this man who
this
looks
guy,
like
this,
the king.
This character, he's completely unrelated. Yes. Just happens to have a ring. He's a totally other person altogether. Yeah, he's quite strong, even for Nina to handle.
Yeah, she actually has to put some effort in. I mean, she still flips him, but, you know.
Yeah, in a barrel, that's so good. Because they're both about to break the barrel they're on, and then she flips him and he lands headfirst onto the pavement.
Yeah. Well, that was when I delivered the barrel. It like lands about 30 seconds later as well.
Yeah, it gets airborne for a bit.
The scene proceeds, and then the background, it just falls behind him.
while this is happening, Bacchus is being met with
an angel.
Sophiel. Mm. We don't get the name there, but I've got the website open, and that's her name on the website.
Does it not say the name where she's talking to some other godlike being in the episode?
Possibly. She mentions Gabrielle will let Bacchus back in to heaven if he finds this kid.
Like, he seems slightly interested, but he's mostly drunk and belligerent. But that seems to be his main character trait.
He's like, I wasn't kicked out of heaven. I left on my own accord.
I want to live in this crap hole.
No way.
I'm not currently drinking right now.
Yeah. And apparently he's like the only... These two are the... Him and Hamsa are the only gods who are walking among men. And we learn later that definitely that, yes, Sherios has been going after gods as well as demons.
Mm.
Which we saw in the first episode, but this is like a verbal confirmation that that's a thing he's been doing.
Yeah, yeah.
When Kaiser's like... And if you go after both of them, they might decide to team up and destroy mankind.
Probably better. Yeah,
they might decide they're better off teaming up to boot stomp you rather than get wiped out slowly. Mm. And the king's just like, you know, thinking that's kind of insolent. So he doesn't get invited to the big party the king has planned.
Yeah, he takes over the investigation, and they're going to basically bring a load of demons in the center of town, execute them until the rag demon shows up.
And they brought most of the army. It seems,
I mean, Nina's explaining, talking about a teacher, and then we eventually get around to why she's staying with Bacchus and Hamsa. How there's only one bounty left, and that's the rag demon, and they can't very well bring him in
because they're mates.
And then she says, and then she mentions that a teacher's name is Favreau, and everyone is like, what?
You know, I've figured it out by. I figured it out before they kind of got to it.
She's like asking Rita, can you tell me about my teacher? And she's like, well, didn't really know him that long. I suppose in her sense of the term, she didn't know him that long because she's so old. But there is somebody you would know who can tell you more about him. And speak of the devil, here's Kaiser.
Yeah. I actually didn't realize that Rocky is his. Is his left hand.
That as well, yes.
I didn't, I thought, that's any hand, but just because you saw, well, I'm just curious, you got his hand chopped out. No sense of letting it go to waste.
It's Rocky's dad.
is that the end thing where he's really upset that he doesn't have its full name?
Yeah, yeah.
Something
have my surname in it. No, Rocky. It's cute.
It's cute.
And so Nina's running off to stop Azazel from getting himself killed by walking into this trap.
Mm.
And meanwhile, Azazel is heading to walk into that trap, telling Muguro, don't follow me. If I get killed, go and see the zombie. And yeah, so we're still waiting for Favreau to show up. He's at least been mentioned by name. We're also still waiting for Jeanne d'Arc to show up as well. But I think everyone else has appeared so far.
I'm going to have to catch up on that first season.
Well, yeah, yeah. I was going to say
The first show was good, but again, I wouldn't say it's like...
I'd say this is better.
I'd say this is better. I hope, like, you know, like, you know, as much as I got returning characters here, it doesn't lean too much on them, because I want to see like what this batch of guys do with here, because kind of just the way it's been going so far, it's like kind of like Azazel is kind of like the secondary main character here. I kind of want to see, get from his point of view, make him kind of a main character in this, rather than just bring back Favreau again and have him save the day. So hope it doesn't kind of go down to that.
Yeah, I wonder if they, like, is this going 26 episodes this time? Or at least two seasons? I think it might be.
I think it is. Maybe it is longer.
So I wonder if they, like, do a read or die where Favreau doesn't show up till, like, the second half.
Okay, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean... Nina is a great character, and quite clearly the animators love animating her because she gets
animation.
She's
like, she is the best animated fucking thing. It's so, like, obviously in the arm wrestling thing, she barely moves and then makes a bunch of smug ass faces and then wrecks people. But then when she's eaten later on, it's fantastic as well.
It was Beerus. It was Beerus season.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Good stuff. She has one of the best faces I've seen. And not in terms of design, but in terms of constantly expressing many things.
Yes.
Well, like when Kaiser shows up and she sits at her hands over the eyes and making the big, just kind of squishing her face up to try and see him. It's great.
Good stuff.
It's going for 24 at least, I think.
Yeah, I thought I'd heard that it was going longer than the first series, so... Yeah, that could be a way they could do it, is establish all the new characters in the first half and then throw a bone to the fans of Favreau and the Joan of Arc and possibly some of the other demons. I can't remember who survived of the other demons. Because obviously, Kerberos is the best one. See, in the first series, Dwayne... Kerberos is a girl who has two dog glove puppets on each hand.
But they're actually just dog hands, are they?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't spoil it. I would have figured that. Oh, dear. I'm going to have to watch that first one. If it's half as good as this, it seems to be worth watching.
Oh, but definitely. It's easily half as good. This seems to be like you know, better than that from the off, but you know that first season is still better than most things.
Yeah, and this first episode is superb.
Okay.
Anything else about this week? I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with the king. If that is the king, I mean, even if it's not the king, I don't know what's going on with the king.
Yeah, if it's not the king, it still raises questions.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, well, like, we have this guy, he's, you know, could be long-lost twin brother or something like that, long-lost family member, which would be, I think, would be the most straightforward answer. I kind of hope it's more something along the lines of, yeah, this isn't the real king, this is why he's acting like such an evil dick.
Yeah, and from the first series, this does have established, like, lots of people pretending to be other people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there was, like, imposters, royal imposters, last year as well. I like as well that they've kicked on with a thing where, like, the next episode preview, which just usually is still, but they have their, which I like, I talk over, but they're doing their characters completely, like, broken up. It's like, you know, hello, it's me, Rita, the zombie girl, and me, Azazel, the demon. It's like, oh, they're just completely against what they are on the show, but I love it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty fun. I still like that ending theme. I guess the opening theme doesn't really, it hasn't really got me yet. Maybe it will, but the ending theme was just really nice.
I like how the opening doesn't really spoil anything because it's kind of all stuff which you can get from the first episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't have it in the first episode, so it's almost like, here you go.
It's just more like, this is this is what's going to happen in the next episode, because it's just the Azazel fighting the Jyoti guy for most of it, isn't it?
Yeah, but all that it's representing in the thing is that he's against them, which, yeah, we knew that. So
yes, and Kaiser is uncertain, and Nina. Yeah, I could believe it took me till writing her name down in the description the other week for me to realize that her surname's an anagram of dragon, and like barely an anagram of dragon.
They moved the N, didn't they?
Yes,
or something.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's like she didn't have a surname when she's driving to the city, and it's like, hello, my name is Nina. Okay, first name. Surname? Dango. Yes.
Because Dragon spelled the same as dragon.
I'm Mr. Snrub. They come from far away.
My favourite one is the tick of Nick. Nick. Soap dish. Yeah, this is easily my favourite thing. Every week now. Yeah. Just because it's so good. It's hard to argue with quality.
It's not like even that much happened in this episode. I mean, the scenes kind of jump around a little, but there's an extended sequence of arm wrestling that I fucking love. you know, it just does what it does very well.
Anything else you watched?
If anything, I'm behind on things.
Two to short.
That's not like, you know, a massive amount behind.
And I need to rewatch Gomachan to find out about the man in the trench coat, so I can report back next week. That ends this week's episode. Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out if Secret of Sailor Madness have got anything to talk about.
We're back on track.
Yay!
If you go to right now, we've got Desert Dive Ego Trip as promised. And coming up not long after that will be Mission Hill, which is a animated comedy TV show from Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, who were writers on The Simpsons. So look forward to that.
Yes, they were the showrunners on the last two good seasons of The Simpsons. And coming up on Dynamite in the Brain is more Japan Animator Expo with Niall.
The takeover continues.
It does.
Are you still there? What's happening?
I'm crashing on the couch, maybe sitting at home. I'm drinking a milk out of a carton from the fridge. I'm not leaving.
That's it. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Oi.
Adios.